Hello, Northgate. It's Pastor Miles. I'm going to try a little different thing because this is what everybody does, right? They stall for the first couple minutes to wait for people to be here, which I kind of like because part of the reason we're not doing a live stream is we don't want to preach to an empty room. And the only thing sadder than preaching to an empty room is preaching to an empty virtual room. So I also don't like wasting people's time. So those of you who might listen to this later, just know 2 minutes at the 2 minute mark. Is when you want to start, hopefully, with me saying something interesting, which gives me a minute and a half. It gives you, folks who aren't here yet, a minute and a half. So, hurry, hurry, now like a minute and 15. I will tell you, like, my day yesterday was good. I tried to bake some sourdough bread, and it didn't work out. I tried to make sourdough bread for the last, like, 4 days, and it didn't work out. But the guy who I follow who was teaching me, hello, whoever just showed up, 2 minutes, and I'm going to start at the two-minute mark. Lizzie, it's a joy to see you. Well, to see your name. So I tried to build, and whoever the other person is, I tried to build this sourdough starter, but the guy who I follow, his name's Dan the Baker. He's in Columbus, Ohio. Super cool, but like he has a million different kinds of flour because he's a baker, so none of my stuff turned out. But I'm forcing it. We're going to see if I can make it happen. So 30 seconds and I'll officially start. Those of you who may be listening to this later, I can cut those first 2 minutes. Hopefully your weekend was delightful. Mine was good. Lots of good things going on at Northgate. Lots of good things going on at our home, which is really just Leanne and I. Hopefully you're finding some people to associate with. I'm excited. We have some things on the horizon, so that should be good. Well, it's been 2 minutes. Welcome to the meaty part. We've been in a book, the Book of Acts, here at Northgate since this whole COVID thing started. So that's where we're going to be today. I spent some time the first few of these, kind of just too big of chunks. So to overcorrect unapologetically, I'm going down to like four verses today, and really it's like three. So Acts 16. If you want to get your Bible. Or your app or some paper and pen, whatever you use to do this, now's the time. I will say that on November 24th of 2019, we did the rest of the book of Acts chapter 16. So I'm not going to rehash any of that. That's how I get away with just spending the time today. So reminder of where we were last week. On Friday, we talked about the Jerusalem Council, and we said that essentially what was going on is that Peter and James and Paul, they had all kind of gathered because there were these Judaizers. These are folks who think that in order to be a believer, even if you are a non-believer, you have to come through the kind of the Jewish living room and bring all that baggage forward into the future with you and Christ. And Paul and Peter and everybody are like, no, you don't need to bring all that. If it's not already part of your background, you don't need to go borrow it and bring that luggage forward. That's for Jews to process. They were trying to eliminate obstacles. We also talked about how it's not a matter of what you do that saves us. Remember, it's our salvation is by grace in Christ alone, and that we don't need to do other things, that we don't need to add things to the work of the cross. It's really the cross alone. We don't need to be baptized, but we ought to be because Jesus says so, and these sorts of things. And then we ended with this kind of dilemma. Do we think that we believe and then we behave and then we belong, or do we belong and then believe and then behave and then become? If all of that just sounds like gibberish to you, go back and listen to the previous thing. But here we are in Acts 16. And what I'm going to do is I'm just going to read some pieces and I'm going to just interrupt myself as much as I want to. Starting in verse 1, it says, Paul went on to Derbe and Lystra, where there was a disciple named Timothy, the son of a believing Jewish woman, but his father was a Greek. And so what we assume the case to be here is that Eunice, which is Timothy's mother's name, we know that she's a believer. Timothy was the son of a believing Jewish woman. But this believing Jewish woman, we know, means that she was a believing Christian at this point with Jewish history. Probably what happened was that she wasn't a practicing Jew when she married the Greek, because you wouldn't, like, even that in and of itself is a little scandalous. You wouldn't do that. You wouldn't be a Jewish person who marries a Greek if you're practicing and if you're sort of devout. So there's this dilemma. He had a Greek father and a Jewish mother, and In Jewish cultures, your heritage of faith was passed down through your mother. And in Greek culture, the man of the house was the man of the house, and he kind of dominated all of the things. And so we have this guy, Timothy, who kind of has this mixed baggage, but we now know is a believer. It says in verse 2, the brothers and sisters at Lystra and Iconium spoke highly of him. So he's a good dude, right? High integrity, high character, probably a merciful fella, studying and passionate about the word. We see in verse 3, or the end of that part, Paul wanted Timothy to go with him. So Paul just rolls into Lystra, and he runs into this guy who has a great reputation, Timothy, and he wants to recruit him to his team, right? He's like, I got an associate pastor position for you. It's going to be awesome. We're going to go see the world. It doesn't pay anything. You're going to get beaten, and it's going to be really hard, but do you want to show up? So he's doing his best sort of recruiting speech, which he then takes this weird turn. Paul wanted Timothy to go with him. I got a job for you. So he took him and circumcised him. This is a weird recruitment strategy, right? I've hired some people in my life. This has never been one of my strategies, especially to an adult, especially on the sort of the shirt tails of the Jerusalem Council, right? We just said that we don't need to be circumcised, that isn't a thing that matters. But Paul wants to circumcise Timothy. Why? The Jerusalem Council, basically, just to summarize, it says that to be saved by grace means that the gospel is God's free grace of his undeserved love for sinners, as shown by the death of his son in our place, right? Circumcision, kosher food laws, those are spiritually neutral. They don't add anything. They don't take away from our faith, but they don't add anything. They don't make us more righteous. So why does Paul want to take Timothy back and trim him up? Different circumstances. The Jerusalem Council is talking about ministering to Gentiles, right? To people who don't have a Jewish background, who don't have that worldview in their heritage. And now we're talking to Timothy, or about Timothy, who is not only historically Jewish, but is also going to be ministering to Jewish folks, right? We're not talking about speaking to full-on Gentiles anymore, or speaking to full-on Gentiles, but we're talking about how Timothy can go about being heard by the Jews in this area, for whom his non-circumcision would be an obstacle. So this is a great time to point out, we've talked throughout this about one of the main themes of this book is finding our role and stepping into it, right? And so I'm a pastor, I preach, I interpret the word, and I try to lead people, and I do all these things. But there are certain people for whom I don't have an audience, right? There are people that I'm called to and people that I'm not called to. And there are people that I can have audience with, that I have authority in their lives, and people that I don't. If I rolled into a biker bar in my pink flamingo shirt and my pink Brethren brew pub hat and my peach and pear LaCroix, I'm not going to get a lot of traction, right? I don't know anything about chrome. I don't know what a manifold is. I think motorcycles are loud and annoying. So I'm not going to have great audience with those folks, right? I have to kind of look the part. I have to speak the language. This is essentially why Paul needs to circumcise Timothy. Paul doesn't think it matters. Timothy may not think it matters, but the Jewish folks to whom he's going to be ministering matter. So Tim's circumcision isn't for Paul. It's not for Tim. It's for the people to whom he is going to be ministering so that he can gain an audience. Once the principle of circumcision, namely that it doesn't have anything to do with salvation, once that principle is established at the Jerusalem Council, they can then say, okay, now the policy, the way we apply this can vary, right? What was unnecessary for the acceptance with God is or may be advisable for acceptance with some of those human beings, right? There are some things that I can do that just give me better audience, right? Some churches, if I wore a shirt and tie all the time, they would just trust what I said. Others, if I wore a shirt and tie, you would just not believe me, right? There's some superficial things. God doesn't care how I dress, but the people to whom I'm ministering do. The people to whom you are ministering on behalf of Jesus do. And so jumping just briefly to 1 Corinthians 9, and we also see this in Romans and 1 Corinthians 8. But in 9:19 and following, it says this, although I am, this is Paul speaking, Although I am free from all and not anyone's slave, I have made myself a slave to everyone in order to win more people. To the Jews, I became like a Jew to win Jews. To those under the law, like one under the law, though I myself am not under the law. To win those under the law. To those who are without the law, like one without the law, though I am not without God's law, but under the law of Christ, to win those without the law. I know some people who are pastors and they consume alcohol. Actually, I was just on a call with a pastor from another place who said, do you imbibe? And it was even like it was a very cautious question. Are you okay with alcohol? And I was like, yeah, I'm good. But some pastors I know they're very secretive about that. And that's not that they're being duplicitous. It's not that they're trying to be inauthentic. For them, it's a matter of conviction, right? That for some folks, they don't want their drinking because they know that they can handle it. They don't want that to be a stumbling block or a deterrent for their witness with their weaker brothers. And don't hear weaker as a judgment. Hear like less seasoned, less familiar with who Jesus is, less wise. Northgate allows Narcotics Anonymous and Alcoholics Anonymous to use our facility every Thursday. And just 2 weeks ago, I had to call the guy and say, hey, I don't know if we can keep this going with all the COVID stuff. And he was super cool. And we talked it through and we said, yeah, we can give you one more week at least, but I don't know after that. And so he called me the following week when I finally had to say, yeah, you can't meet here for a bit. And he said for him at that meeting, only about 8 people showed up, but one of the people was just having an awful, awful, awful week. But she made sure that she showed up because she wanted to get her 1-year chip. She had been clean and sober for a year and how much that meant to her. And I think like those are not people that I would have over to my house and like share some of Brother Brewpub's best work. Like I would have her over and we would talk about Jesus, but I'm not going to put anything before her or him that could be a stumbling block, right? It's our job as the mature believers not to weigh down, not to put yokes on the backs or the necks of our younger, weaker believers. So for Christians with a strong conscience, we ought not to violate the conscience of the weak. This is what we see in these passages, right? That is a person who understands the freedom of alcohol. I can have a glass of cab and not have 10. I can have an old fashioned and not have 10. For me, that isn't a stumbling block. But boy, if I know that somebody has that in their background, I'm not going to invite them into that. This is why we talk about this. This is how we start every brew pub. If this isn't the place for you, don't be here. Come and talk to us. We still have a relationship, but we want to be cautious. We don't want to trip up our younger brothers and sisters. So the things that came out of the Jerusalem Council that we're seeing kind of played out more vividly in 16 are this. One, that salvation is by grace and faith. That we don't add anything to it, right? Our circumcision doesn't get us more righteous. Our baptism, our communion, these are things that we should do, but they don't save us. They are, again, outward expressions of inward grace or transformation. And the second thing is that we have this ethic of love, right? To preserve fellowship by sensitive concessions to our brothers and sisters. Right? Things that are neutral, let's defer to the weaker brother. We ought to be like this in the way we live our lives, right? Martin Luther said this about Paul as he looks through Acts and he looks through Paul's letters. He says that Paul was strong in faith, but soft in love, which I think is good. But what this other guy, John Newton, said in 1799, I think is just beautiful and something I hope we can spend some time sort of just reflecting on because I think it's just brilliant. He says, Paul was a reed in non-essentials and an iron pillar in essentials. I mean, you look at Paul and he's very deferential and he's a reed. He kind of just goes with the flow and lets the wind do what he needs about things that aren't essential, right? If circumcision is non-essential, if it's salvation neutral, then yeah, whatever you want to do, man, do the thing. But the things about which he can't waver. Jesus was the Son of God. Jesus died and was resurrected. That Jesus is the one whose work on the cross brings us back into the throne room of the Father. Those sort of things that we don't get to waver on. You're not going to pin Paul down and change his position. So in a world where we are dying to fight, we just seem to always be splitting and polarizing and trying to establish who's inside and who's outside. And try to find who we can belong with or what idea we can belong with. I just pray that we as Christians cannot play that game, right? That we don't participate in the same nonsense and foolery. Rather, can we stand firm like that iron pillar, Paul, on the things that are essential, that we don't bend and sway like a reed about the things that matter? Jesus, crucifixion, resurrection, holy and righteous Son of God. But the things that are non-essential, gosh, why are we splitting hairs? Why are we going out of our way to allow division? Why are we duplicating these things? We're just basically taking the bait that the world puts in front of us. And I would rather us live out of loving deference to our brothers and sisters, to the weaker brother and sisters, and show them the strength and hope and mercy and peace of Jesus by not taking the bait, by not playing the same games that everybody else plays. And so we are in a season where we're kind of trapped or liberated from busyness, depending on how you want to word it. But I have this fear that when we get back out into the real world, all of this time could have been wasted, that we would not have spent the appropriate amount of time just remembering who Jesus is, remembering who he calls us to be, and that we could get more and more sort of entrenched in our own rhetoric.